This session is 60 minutes. This panel is going to discuss the experiences of two popular radio personalities in Utah, both Mormon. Each will describe their journeys into radio as well as their Mormon journey inside and outside of the church. Richard Thomas Stedman is from Radio From Hell, show fresh-faced Mormon senior executive producer and grassroots outreach coordinator. He is not a host on Radio From Hell, but he does appear sporadically on the show and anecdotes of his own. He began as an intern for Carrie, Bill, and Gina, but he eventually became a paid employee of the station. Richie hosts the Richie T Experience on Saturday mornings on X96. Richie is a graduate of Southern Utah University and was a DJ on the radio station there. Bill Allred is a native of Ogden, Utah. He attended public school and Weber State College, where he received his Bachelor of Arts degree in theater. He then went on to Penn State, where he did 3 years work on a master's degree in acting. Since 1980, Bill's full-time job has been in radio. He has worked at KJQ and has been with X96 since its inception. At X96, Bill is a part of Radio From Hell show with Kerry Jackson and Gina Barberry, weekday mornings from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. Bill is married to the talented graphic designer Jennifer Parsons, has 4 children, 2 old ones and 2 new ones. So how we're going to do this is they're going to spend the first half of the time talking, and we're going to spend the rest of the time with Q&A. So think of your questions, anything you'd like to know from these gentlemen. All right, take it away, guys.
You want to go first, Bill, or do you want me to?
Well, I don't really. Thanks for coming.
Yeah.
I don't really know where to start, so why don't you start, and then I'll correct you.
Okay. Well, I mean, as it was introduced, so I'll talk a little bit about my journey, how I got into radio, and how that kind of plays its way with the church, and then to where I'm at now.
And then I'll talk about how I got out of the church and found my way into radio.
Yeah. So, the real simple, the way that I found myself in radio was, growing up, I used to listen to the Dr. Demento show. That's where Weird Al and some other of those guys got their start. I used to listen late at night on Sunday nights on K-Bear here in Salt Lake, and I would record it and then take these parody songs to school the next day on an old tape recorder and play it for my friends. And there was all sorts of sexual innuendo that we didn't get, but we knew where the joke punchline was. So I did that. That was sort of my first foray into thinking about it. Between the ages of 14 and 16, I became what is known in the radio industry as a prize pig. I listened to the oldie station here in Salt Lake probably 10 hours a day, where I would try and win every single giveaway that they would do, and I just listened to the radio all the time. I loved it. I loved the old music and all that stuff. But radio as a profession had never kind of dawned on me until much later. When I served my mission, I served in Cleveland, Ohio, and I had 19 companions in the 2 years that I was there, which is...
I can understand why.
Yeah. It was them, not me, though. And I was not the difficult one. And I only liked one or two of those companions. One of the companions that I had was an elder out of California, and he was the one that first introduced me to the idea of being a radio professional, because that's what he had said he was going to do when he moved back home. And so when I went back to Southern Utah University, they have a radio program. I took the class and fell in love with it and have been doing it ever since. I did it in college, and then immediately out of college, I came and started interning for the Radio From Hell show, and then have been doing it with the Radio From Hell show ever since. So that's sort of my brief radio history. But as far as the church goes, like I said, I served a mission. About 7 months returning home from my mission, I was disfellowshipped. We're being candid. It's Sunstone. I was disfellowshipped for dry humping, and then I was admitted like 7 months later when I had a different bishop in college when I went back to school the next year. And then about 6 months into my junior year of college, I was excommunicated, also for sexual misconduct, however, not intercourse ever. Which is a discussion that we can talk about if you're interested.
Well, if it wasn't dry humping, what was it?
It was wet. No, I don't know. It was
floating.
No, not floating. I don't understand that. I know what it is.
I don't really know what that is either.
No, like oral sex and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
But excommunicated nonetheless. And so when I came to work for these guys, they knew that I had served a mission. And where it kind of gets interesting, and maybe what we'll talk a little bit about in this panel, is these guys knew I was Mormon, and so they immediately gave me the tag of Mormon. So
fresh, our fresh-faced Mormon producer.
Yeah.
Look at him now.
Yeah.
No freshness in that face.
Beaten, trodden down. But it was an interesting thing because them having known that I had served a mission, coming into this show, this very popular show, given the label of Mormon, I felt for me that there was, because of that title of Mormon, there was a standard then that I needed to uphold to.
Did you feel sort of an evangelical fervor?
Like a missionary thing with you guys?
Yeah.
A little bit. And then knowing that a lot of people listen, and given the label Mormon, like it was like, to me, it was very much this idea of if I'm Mormon and people know that, it was almost a standard that I wasn't holding myself.
Was it your
to
calling? Me. Did it become your calling?
I think eventually it did. But at first it was just if people know this about me, well then I guess I'd better do it. And it was fascinating to me because listeners then of the show took two ways to it. One side of it was either, oh man, you're Mormon, thank you. I don't know how you put up with these guys and being Mormon, but that's amazing. Thanks for being an example. Thanks for showing that you can, you know, be loving and kind and practical and be Mormon and still be with these guys because I love the show. And then there were the people who would be like, well, you know, I've always wanted to help a Mormon not be a Mormon. Have you read this? Or do you want to go out with me and do this? Or any of those?
Would you like to do a little dry humping?
Yeah, exactly.
Got that from men and women.
All kinds. So it's an interesting thing. I'm now divorced, but when I was married, that's when I got rebaptized into the church and have had that experience and, you know, hold a temple recommend now. So I've
You know what's interesting about that to me is you never really talked about that.
No.
I think I did know it before now, but when that was all going on, I had no idea.
Yeah. You know, and it's an interesting thing too, because of the tremendous pressure that probably was really only placed on me. I don't think you guys would have cared one bit one way or another, you know. But it was like things like I would spend copious amounts of time online trying to find white underwear that looked like garments should my pants hang down a little bit that didn't have like Fruit of the Loom or Hanes.
Most of the things he's talking about right now are the reason I am not a Mormon anymore.
but it was a thing because, you know, at that point I was so invested. It was where I wanted to be, but because of the choices that I'd made, I couldn't be that at that point. And so, you know, to do as much as I could to be who I wanted to be until I could have the strength to do that, I guess. So that's me.
I have a sort of, and feel free to, you know, kibitz
on me.
I have a sort of a happier story than that.
Yeah.
Because that sounds really miserable to me. I grew up in Ogden, and my lineage, very strong Mormons. My grandmother, you know, a daughter of the Utah Pioneers, and went to the meetings, and my grandfather, and they all expected me to go. They expected me to go on a mission right out of high school, and all of that stuff. And those expectations were on me. And but at I don't know, around the age of 15 or so, I started kind of observing, and I don't know, this might have been unique to my ward, but I don't think so. I think it happens in a lot of places. The people that are put in power, in authority, in the ward, the bishop, the bishopric, you know, the other, I forget who they are now, their secretaries and things like
counselors,
that.
Counselors, sure.
They don't know how to use the power that they have. They don't know. They think they're all that because now they're the bishop, but they're not. Now I think it might have improved over the years, but this was so the way that things were handled in my ward a lot of times, it was like the Salem witch trials. You know, it was they were very disapproving of people, some people in the ward, and they were very disapproving of people in the neighborhood who weren't LDS. Yeah, you know, you knew everybody on the street, And Paul and M. Russell and all of their kids, well, you know, they're not Mormon. And they smoke and they drink. You know. And I lived four houses away from Paul and M. Russell and all of their kids. And you know what? They were really nice people. They were the sweetest, nicest people in the neighborhood in a lot of ways. And I just got, you know, all of that started bugging me when I was 15 and 16. And then, you know, to get disfellowshipped for doing what normal boys and girls do. And that happened to kids in my ward, you know. So probably all of that, and then I started having sex with my girlfriend when I was about 16 or 17, and I was out. I stopped going altogether. You know, much to the dismay of my grandparents, my parents. Yeah, my father was an alcoholic. He never went. My mother tried to go periodically, but you know, it's when you're living with an alcoholic husband, and you know, she'd rather just sleep on Sunday. And so, probably, I think I attained the rank of priest.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know if rank is the right word, but all right.
Whatever. And then
you got
I
the
was
little badge.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I was done. Probably when I was 17, I was 16, 17. I was done. I never went back. And over a certain period of time, not very long, not only did I not be a Mormon anymore, I was not. I became pretty much an atheist. Not pretty much. I am an atheist. And if you ask my children, do you guys believe in God? They'll go, no, no, we don't. That's just the norm in our family. My wife, who is from a very strong Mormon family, is atheist. I'm atheist. My kids are atheists. We just say, don't say that around Grandma. Don't swear and don't tell her you're an atheist. You know, because my wife's mother, my parents are gone, my grandparents are gone, but my wife's mother is just the sweetest, most wonderful woman in the world, and she's a very, very staunch Mormon. And it pains her greatly. It hurts her so much to know that none of her kids are anymore. Oh, except one. But the rest of her kids are like, no, we're not Mormons anymore. So then radio. I got into radio kind of accidentally. I'd been kicking around. I went, as you heard, maybe if you listen to the intro, I studied to be an actor. I went to graduate school at Penn State, got a Master of Fine Arts degree in acting, and then I was going to go off and be an actor. I don't know. I lived in New York for a while. I worked in regional theaters for a while. Got a job back at the Utah Shakespeare Festival. After I'd been living in New York, and so I came to Utah to do the Utah Shakespeare Festival, and when that was over, I was broke, because you didn't get paid. You got paid nothing back then. They pay them fairly well.
You didn't get paid at all?
I got $200 and a room and food. They would feed you three times a day. Mm. That's what it was. And so I went back to Ogden, and I was broke, and but I was going to get some money together and go back to New York. Didn't happen. I walked into somebody came into a bar I was working in and said, I just quit my job at a radio station. And he said, I'm going to Idaho. You ought to look into that. And I thought, yeah, I'll do that. Went to work at the radio station just thinking that it would be temporary. It was a steady paycheck while I got some money together, and I just never stopped doing it. That was 1979 or 80, and I just never stopped doing it. I liked it better and better, and I would listen to other people on the radio locally and go, geez, I could do that. what's so great about that? You know, I can do that, and just kept at it, and we've become pretty successful. And how to deal with Mormonism on the radio.
That's what I was going to say. That might be an interesting thing to share.
So it's evolved. It's evolved for me over the years about just not talking about it much, about my own personal beliefs, until now I'll, and again, I don't go into it a lot, but if somebody asked me the story, a caller asked me the story, I'd tell them an abbreviated version of what I just told you. I don't care now. But at the beginning, it was like, how do we not step on too many toes and yet be genuine and honest with ourselves? And how do we not offend? I don't want to, and it's never really been my goal or to offend the Mormon culture. It's not been my goal at all. We used to do a bit, so some of the old, or you old listeners will know, we used to do Space Elders, where there was these two Mormon missionaries in the 21st century who would go out and spread the gospel throughout the galaxy. And it was gentle satire. You know, just kind of little, it was all just, you remember that,
sure.
Those bits, and they were
sure.
Just kind of gentle. And it's funny, people would react in one of two ways. They would, and they still do to our show. They would say, how can you be so, you know, sacrilegious to this community, the Mormon community? How can you, you are awful. And then there were other people who would call in and say, way to go, way to put it to the Mormons. And, you know, neither one of those sides was really our audience. Our audience was nice Mormon people who just liked to, didn't mind laughing a little bit and didn't mind if, you know, if we poked a little fun occasionally. It was never meant to be malicious and has never meant to be malicious because I like being here. I like living among, it's my, you know, I didn't really realize this, but I interviewed Lindsay for a podcast that I do. And she talked about being a cultural Mormon as opposed to a practicing Mormon. And that's really what I consider myself. That's my roots. I'm culturally a Mormon. It's where the stock that I come from, and I like that, and I'm proud of that, and I like the people, and yeah.
You know, it's an interesting thing though, because I don't think that this show could exist were you to allow it to be anti-Mormon. I just don't think that, you know, the market would allow it to be that way. And there really is this sort of delicate balance that we take if there is something within the church to talk about, right?
I mean, and I don't think we have really to this day, ever ridiculed Mormons for wearing garments. It would be, in a way, an easy target.
Right.
But we would never do it because it's just a little too much. It's hard for me to even talk about it now because I think I'm just sensitive to it. I don't think we ever, you know, I think I'm sensitive to it, and just intuitively I try not to step over the line.
Right.
But I've become more open about expressing my feelings about it and my opinions about it. And I don't think I think people like it when you're honest with them.
Right.
You know, and people say, how does that show, people from outside of the state, they'll say, how do you do that show in Utah with all those Mormons?
Radio from Hell with all those Mormons?
How can you do that? You've got to figure that if, I always use the figure 70%, I think it's gone down a little. But, you know, 70% of the target audience out there is Mormon. So you got to figure probably 70% of the people that listen to us are Mormon.
And won't tolerate it.
If you go too far, they won't listen anymore. So that's, you know.
Yeah. There was something else that you touched on that I was going to bring up. Oh, I mean, I think it's a fairly pretty good guideline that, like, anything that would come up that we would talk about, like rituals or ordinances is kind of where we won't talk about it, right?
Yeah.
Like, you'll make fun of, you know, people being Mormon or, you know.
Yeah, we'd never.
But like, any sort of, like, temple ritual, anything like that, there is a discussion off the air where we go, what about this? And pretty much anymore, the pulse for it for me is if I go, ugh, as soon as they say it, I go, yeah, I kind of don't think that's a place
to
go.
Is our Mormon barometer, you know. But, and it's like, you know, it's like, so it's having the resident a Mormon referee, you know, Richie will come running into the studio as we start talking about something and say, yes, he says, I'm just here in case we, you
just
know,
in case you need a Mormon reference.
Just in case you need some. And, you know, it's funny, I've forgotten a lot of the stuff. I went to church with Richie on a
He bat. Lost a bet.
I lost a bet, and so I went for the fundraiser for the Road Home, and somebody, if they, I don't know how much
was we raised a certain
lot
amount
of money,
he had to come with me. But to that point, right? I mean, you said you hadn't been in what 20 years, maybe before More. That. We went to an inner city ward, and it was great. I had a great time.
Yeah.
Right? And I felt like you enjoyed it. Right?
I did. I enjoyed it a lot. People kind of knew, you know, the bishop or and there were actually there was a stake counselor there, I think, and they sort of knew what was going on, and they were so nice to me, you know, and just very, it was great. I enjoyed it a lot.
Do we have anything else? Should we open it to questions?
Yeah. If you have questions, you can ask them. Yeah. What?
Nice and loud.
Did you wear the earrings to church that day?
Yeah. Yeah, I wore my earrings to church, yeah. I forget that they're there. I only take them out if the surgeon says, I'm not going to operate on you until you... They won't let you wear them in the operating room.
But was that even a thought? I know we kind of teased you on air about, like, what you were going to wear, but...
No, I said I'll be present. I think I wore a tie, didn't I?
Yeah, shirt and tie.
Yeah, I was presentable, yeah.
Loud. Yeah.
You were looking at me. You want me to answer that? I think that the foundations of many religions, all religions, are based on things that are unprovable. All of them. Whatever Joseph Smith experienced in the grove, or said he experienced, no one was there. He was there. I think all of that is unprovable. It always strikes me as slightly amusing that Mormons, and maybe other religions do this too, but Mormons are really determined to prove that this stuff is. There is scientific evidence they got on submarines and the Lost Tribe and came to the continent, you know, and they are so determined to prove all of this stuff, and that there were tribes living on the America continent, and they just really, and you know what, that really amuses me, and it bugs me a little bit, because I think that your religion, whoever you are, should be based on faith, not scientific evidence. It's faith, and if you believe it, and it helps you get through your day, and Richie was actually sort of just what you were talking about exactly on the radio mm-hmm. today. So, you know, I personally think Joseph Smith was a con man, but again, that's even unfair of me, because I don't really know what his intentions were. But he had charisma, and he had the ability to convince people that what happened to him was real. And there you go. So, I don't know. Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
You have to say a little louder.
Yeah, louder.
Why
would Joseph Smith persist in the stories and his religion if it was all a con? He came under a lot of persecution.
Sure.
Well, you know, if you know anything about messianic personalities, there are people who consider Mormonism a cult, and they would consider Joseph Smith to be a cult leader. And you know, they so there is that aspect to consider. If you ask me why, I'm not saying that's why, but it's something to consider.
Yes, please.
For Bill, the TV show, what's your favorite restaurant song?
We're going to lighten it up. Thank you.
Let's see. Well, I, you know, there's so many good ones right now. I like going to Current, and I like going to, I went to, is it Vento or Veneto? It's there on 9th South, and it's Italian, and it's there's a lot of wine there, and it's really expensive, so I won't go there very much. That was good, and I, you know, yeah, those are
the
two. Did
you try that Hires? That Hires is
that Hires drive-in place?
That?
I don't care for that anymore.
Red Robin? Have you been to a Red Robin?
Yes, I have.
Mm-hmm. Applebee's? That's
they have bottomless steak fries there, you know. Yeah.
I look for the bottom of them. I can't find the bottom of those fries. Yeah.
George. You know, it was the music, really, that that made it successful initially. There was a group of people, and I was not associated with them at the time, and they started in Bountiful at KCGL, and it was a little station, a little, I don't know, so anyway, small station
before
in Bountiful.
Before my time.
Very small station in Bountiful, and they, a doctor, I think, owned it, and his son, and I don't know what they were playing at the time, but his son really liked this modern music, this new wave music, Flock of Seagulls and, you know, that kind of stuff. And he convinced his father to let him start programming music on that station. And it became wildly successful for a little tiny station in Bountiful. But the father at some point said, I'm selling it, and they got kicked out of there. They moved that format around to a bunch of different stations, and then eventually landed on the station that I was working at, which was KJQ in Ogden. And they bought time, the people who were doing that modern music format, they bought time, and they were on. They bought the time from midnight to 6, sold their own advertising. And the owner of the station realized that at 6 o'clock, Kerry Jackson and I would come in and start playing Mariah Carey and crap like that. And the owner of the station quickly realized that that music that was being played from midnight to 6 was becoming more popular and more people were listening to it than were listening to what else, the other stuff we were playing during the day. So he flipped it and started doing that 24 hours a day, and it just took off from there. And so it was the music, and then Kerry and I started developing kind of some personality. And there was some resistance to that because there were people who just wanted the music. We don't want that crap. You don't want you guys talking. Stop doing that. And but we started developing stuff, and people seemed to like it, and we kept at it. And then 9/11 happened, and I'll stop the history with that. 9/11 happened, and we were on the air that morning, and we stopped playing music in the morning because we were dealing with what was happening in New York, and people were calling in, and we'd been asking our boss for a while, can we do just a morning show that doesn't have music? Because the music had become prevalent, and people, a lot of other stations were already now playing all that kind of music. There were other stations playing it. We said, we want to be unique. Let's just not play it. They can get it anywhere. And so, but that morning is where we began doing just talk in the morning, and it has continued since then.
Yes, please. Oh, thank you. Jeez.
So I kind of wondered, is there any good experience of kind of that crossover where maybe someone who didn't have a good opinion of the LDS Church kind of heard something you had said and built some understanding? Or the other way, for someone who's, I think a lot of people that are LDS, this show kind of exposes them to a different culture.
Sure. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. So there have been, because of the internet and because of streaming and a lot of that stuff, there is a way for people to obviously listen to the show not being from Utah. And there are some, you know, really like hardcore listeners of the show who knew nothing about Mormonism. They would, you know, say, hey, it's our Mormon, we talk about different things. And on various occasions, so just on a basic, simple outreach where people have said, I don't know anything about Mormons, but, you know, my boss is a Mormon. What, you know, he always is inviting me to church. What about that? And I think in that way, I'm an approachable way because it's someone that they feel like they know really well because they listen every morning. They know, you know, that who and what's going on with me and all that stuff. But I'm not that so close person like their boss or like their neighbor who's trying to do it. Or trying to, you know, teach them the gospel or share the gospel with them. So, yeah, there are opportunities all the time. The thing that I love and probably cherish the most about it is there are a lot of people, like I always say that everyone in Utah is a little bit Mormon because either you're affected by it because nowhere is open on Sunday or no activities are planned on Monday night or, you know, whatever the thing is. And for a lot of people, I serve sort of as this thing, like, why is this? You know, they can ask me and they know that one, I'll give them a straight answer, but I can just answer their question without them feeling like I'm going to try and convert them. And in a way, it's opened up communication that they don't have otherwise. You know, I can share that little bit and then they come and they can ask me a little bit more. And it's a comfortable place for a lot of people to feel like they can ask any question, and I'm not going to say, oh, you're so stupid, but I'm also not going to say, well, hey, Bill, you know, they asked a question, so we better get the, you know, the missionaries over to their house. I think the time is right. They know that I'm going to give them...
You sent the missionaries to my house, didn't you?
But yeah, that's a thing for another time. That was young, but...
It was pretty funny, actually.
You know, a safe place... for people to be able to have questions. And anyone who has been a former member of the church doesn't go anymore, you know, with them, I think any single one of them know that if they ever want to come back, that I am more than willing to do whatever it would be for them or answer any question that
they
have.
Are you talking to me?
Well, I mean, if you feel something right now, that, then yeah.
Take your hand off my thigh. Take your...
Well, you felt something. See, my hand was here the whole time.
Nope.
No, but to provide an opportunity where people go, yeah, you know what? It's just genuine, and I'm not a stupid person. I'm able to be faithful, continue to do what I am, and I'm not dumb. I know about Joseph Smith's wives. I know about all those things. These guys throw it at me all the time. I know about it, but I'm still able to be.
You have faith.
A member of the church. I'm able to have faith. I'm able to fellowship that way. So it's been really awesome. It's actually one of my favorite things about the combination of radio and my Mormonism.
That's the thing. I mean, and Richie said it there. He said it today on the radio. And it's really what I understand is that we all have different ways of figuring out how to be good people. You know, how do we be good people to each other? How do we live lives that we think are helpful? And Richie needs that structure. He needs that religion. It teaches him and shows him ways to be good. And I get it from TV. No, I get it from my mother. My grandparents and books and things like that. So this guy had a question right here.
Right up front.
Yeah.
Okay,
my name's Josh.
Hi, Josh.
So I grew up in New York City, and I was like the only Mormon kid in my high school, and so I would talk to my friends about the church because, you know, growing up, they say every member would have to be a missionary.
Sure.
Line of what you're talking about, or do you sort of have to say, do you find like you have to stop the flow
Sometimes.
Yeah. If it's beyond like a ward or like a stake, right? If you're talking about like Nephi, okay, well, Nephi was a person in the Book of Mormon who, like, yeah, there has to be some context around it. And
usually we're pretty good about going, oh, wait a minute, now we're getting a little too deep in the weeds here. We'll explain this, or we'll stop talking about it.
Or they'll say, email Richie, and he'll answer it for you in the in-depth way. But yeah, it definitely has to be a thing, just like any conversation. You can't just pick up and be assume. I think it's kind of rude to assume that everyone would know what you're talking about.
So we talked about Paul Lynde today, and we had to stop and say, wait a minute, probably not everybody knows who Paul Lynde is anymore.
Not a Mormon, but... So. Yeah, you do. What was your question?
Yeah, so I grew up in Los Angeles in the 80s. Huge product of K-Rock, Johnny Dagenheimer, love radio. From your perspective, in modern-day streaming, podcasting, archived radio shows you can go back and listen to, where do you see the future of radio?
Dying.
Man, it's... nobody knows. And it's certainly different from when I started in 1980. But I would only say this. People have predicted the death of radio time and time and time again, and it's never happened. There are plenty of people who own radio stations who, because of their ineptitude, are trying to kill it, but they think they're not trying to kill it, but they are trying to kill it because they're such idiots. But... it'll always be around. There's a need for it. It's very personal. That's why we wanted to do talk, because it's personal. It's more personal. You don't develop really a personal relationship with the people on TV, you know, the local news people, but you do develop a personal feeling for people on the radio. And my theory about that is it's because you can't see them. So you have to create an image of them in your head, and they become yours. They become people that you really like or hate, you know. And so radio will always be around, I think.
To speak a little more to it, though, actually what it'll look like, I think you'll get in a smart car that's connected to the internet, and you'll get in and say, play radio from hell, and it will be like your DVR. And that's how radio will be delivered to you. I think those who are good storytellers will remain. I think you'll see a lot of people come from podcasting world, and you'll see that surge, and that will become where radio kind of comes. I think that these strictly music, you know, jukebox things, I think those will go away with Pandora. I mean, there's no difference, and with Pandora, it tailors it to what you like. The thing that you'll never get away from, and that it will always exist, is because radio is free. Pandora costs, a smart car, you know, can't do that. And just the very nature of being able to go over radio airwaves to get a message out, those things will always exist, but it'll be way more tailored to what you want from a radio station than how it is now.
And there will always be Mormons on the radio.
Yeah. Always. Yeah. Hey. Nope, disfellowshipped once and then excommunicated once. Don't give me two. Okay, you're fine.
Why did you come back?
Why did I come back? Okay. Right. So I was excommunicated for 9 years. And as I mentioned, so I at the time that I was excommunicated, I'd never had sex. And then being, you know, single in your 20s and all that, it was like, well, you know... maybe something to this sex thing, and they wouldn't allow me to be rebaptized while I was doing that. So then when you get married, the rules change, and you can have sex, and then you can get rebaptized. So that was the duration. It was 9 years. And that was difficult, right? I also do a podcast that's called The Cultural Hall. I'll go ahead and pick up that plug I just made. But I recently talked to this person who... is a sex addict, and he was in the bishopric, and he was hiring prostitutes, and at the time that he came forth to his bishop, he was only disfellowshipped. And so it's fascinating to me that that can happen and that I can be excommunicated for not having sex, right? A huge amount of, like,
wait a minute, I've heard of Bishop Roulette before, but this is insane.
Are you bitter and resentful?
No, honestly, it's just a thing to me where when I was disfellowshipped, I didn't share this because for time, but when I was disfellowshipped, it was an incredible feeling of the Spirit. Like, you know, what I identified to feel the Spirit was like, I don't understand this, but it was an amazing thing for me. When I was excommunicated, it was just sort of, you know, this neutral thing. I didn't feel great. I didn't feel bad about it. The Sunday after being excommunicated, there was this overwhelming feeling like, you know what, if they don't want me, I don't want them. But I pushed through it and went. And, you know, every Sunday in the time that I was excommunicated was at church every Sunday and would participate as much as I possibly could because it wasn't ever a question of my faith or my belief. It was a question that, yeah, did you have sex? Yes. Okay, well, then you can't do that. All right, well, I'll do these other things that I can until you say I can do these other things. And now I can.
It's kind of a mystery to me why I've never been disfellowshipped. I've never been excommunicated.
Well, as soon as I become your bishop, it is my first order of business.
No, I'm teasing. R. Thomas Stedman.
Yeah, I'm going to get you back. Come into my office.
Yeah.
You mentioned you never really lost your faith.
Uh-huh. All right. So, I mean, casually, right? But there wasn't ever that question, for me to do anything else, right? So not really. I mean, you do the world religions class at college, and it's like, from a Mormon point of view, here are the world religions. So, I mean, that was sort of
I took a literature of the Bible class once, and the guy who taught it was so Mormon, it was just like, what Bible are we talking about here?
The Mormon Bible. Yeah. But I will say to this, in the last year or so, so currently, I got married, then I got divorced, and the girl that I'm seeing is not LDS.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, my God.
But she comes with me because I said, guess what? This is important to me. But she is sort of this, you know, just kind of spiritual, treat everybody right. And it's been eye-opening, and I've loved it. She was raised Catholic, so we've had discussions about Catholicism. She's also big into meditation. And I don't think that Mormonism has to, you know, disavow meditation, Catholicism, all these things. And so through that, I feel like I'm not only learning more, which I think is kind of the purpose of being here, but it also strengthens, you know, who I am, because I understand, okay, this is how this fits in. This is how I can be inclusive as opposed to exclusive. So for me, it's been tremendously beneficial. Yeah.
So it sounds like you've kind of created this persona, this public persona of the accessible Radio from Hell Mormon.
Yeah. Right.
So how much, let me ask you, how much of your life is kind of contingent on forwarding and continuing to put forward that persona, and how would that be affected if you left the church?
How much more of my life be affected? I mean, it, for anyone, I think, that has been, True Blue or whatever we want to call it, I think it would be a completely different life from what I am, not in how I treat people, not in all that. So maybe that's just my initial reaction to it.
Well, it's not going to happen.
Well, and that's the thing that
speculative, sir.
Yeah. I didn't want to say that because anything can happen, but I was excommunicated for 9 years for not having sex. I feel like if there was a reason I was going to leave, it would be that. I don't know, you know, short of, I guess, some sort of abuse situation.
You know, I don't
like
know.
That. What's that? Yeah, I mean, there are lots of reasons, I suppose.
I have a hard time, and I'll be honest with you all, and I don't think I've said this on the radio, and it might be something I wouldn't say on the radio. I have a really hard time understanding how people can stay in the church with this the parents of the gay parents of children being labeled apostates, and I just think, oh my God, please, this can't, you know, this, how can this stand?
Mm-hmm.
And then I will say to Mormons, it won't. There will be a day that, like when, you know, the mark of Cain was removed and people could, you know, hold, black people could hold the priesthood. Although why they wanted to, I wasn't sure, but some do. Mm. That will change, I think. And I think that there will be acceptance in the LDS Church someday of same-sex marriage. Now, that's not to say I think that there will be same-sex marriages in LDS temples, but there will be more acceptance of it. And this apostate thing, that'll go away sooner than later, I think. That's just...
So if the church can change its incredibly bigoted stance on gays, Richie, do you think you can change your beliefs on the church?
Well, sure. I think that it has, right? I think again, more detail. This is when I went on my mission. My freshman year of college, I didn't want to take dance classes, which is where I got my minor in college, because I was afraid it would make me gay. All right, I don't think that way at all. But I genuinely not practically, not logically, if I thought it out. But it was like, if I take a dance class, then I'll be gay, and I don't want to be
those
gay.
Dance belts, you know, yeah. That you have to wear. Yeah. They go right up there,
yeah. and then once that's up there, then what else do you want up
exactly.
there?
Exactly.
Yes, I know, I get it. But it really was. I consider myself to be always changing, always evolving, and always being better. And there are a lot of people who feel like within the church, like that policy, right? If I'm part of the church and there's that policy, that means that I'm okay with that. And I'm not okay with that, but I'm able to still be within the church. Because the church isn't going to change if it's a bunch of people going, yeah, you bet, you betcha. There has to be some sort of dissonance within the church that says, not okay with it, but... this and this and this, and I'm going to stick around. Yep. Did you take dance classes when you were younger? I knew it. See?
And theater.
Yeah, and theater.
I'm trying to get my family still Mormon.
Uh-huh. How are they with it?
They're pretty cool.
Okay, good.
I'm trying to find a nice middle ground where they can maybe be advocates
uh-huh.
for the thing that they say they're accepting for.
It. Sure. Right.
Because right now they don't know how to be an advocate in the community.
Right.
Do either of you have any suggestions?
There are organizations. There's Mormons Building Bridges. And
what's that?
PFLAG.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. PFLAG. I've talked to a lot of those people and interviewed them, and they're very sincere. And very nice, and a lot of them are still very, very Mormon. I mean, they're still members of the church, but they're working towards building that understanding. And part of it is the hierarchy of the church is really old. I mean, it's just they're very old, and it's hard for them. That it's a different time. And I think I think they'll always be really old, but they will remember that they were once young. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They'll age, and I think they're the leadership of the church will always be older, quite older people. But I think they'll, I've become an older person, and I've become more liberal and tolerant as I've gotten older, and I think that'll happen.
The biggest thing is there are tons of resources out there. So long as I feel like their desire for them to be an advocate is there for you, they'll get there. It's hard if you think about people's expectations, and we can remove homosexuality from it, right? If people have expectations of anything, of anyone, I think when something doesn't meet their expectations, I think that it's hard for them, human nature, to see it as something else.
Accepting and they want to be advocates, but because of the
Right.
Right.
Right. I mean, again, the resources and people around other people who have gone through it before, I think, is a great thing. But I think that if they can come from a place where it's just like, it's my kid and I love him. What? It's my brother or my sister and I love him. Why are you coming at me? Why is that a bad thing? You're gonna stigmatize me because I love my son or, you know, my brother or my sister. And I think that's just the place that they have to go. You know what? If you're going to think that about me, I don't need that in my life. And if they really care a lot about you, that'll win out and people will see it. I think the love comes from it. Yeah.
So you had mentioned that your market is like 70% Mormon, roughly.
It's whatever the Wasatch Front is. So 60.
Well, I think that there we do. I think we kind of corner the liberal market, and then I think that there are people who are moderate who also like it and listen to it because it's not all political. It's you know we try to provide. I call it. It's not a talk show. It's an entertainment show. You know, we try to make it entertaining and funny and a little risque here and there, and you know, and then so I think that we got the liberals, I think we've got the moderates, and then there's a certain core of people who just can't stand us.
Well, but further, I also think that for some people it's a dirty little secret because they're within their own car, right? So they're at their ward on Sunday, and someone will say, like, on the boner of the day, and they're like, oh, that's terrible, and then they'll pull the person on the, you know, out in the hallway and be like, FOP 20 years, I just want you to know I couldn't say that out loud in there, but good, I got you, right? So yeah, I think to some, it's not a dirty little secret, but yeah, they definitely dive in on that. Guilty pleasure. Yeah. Make it good, it's the last one.
Yeah. I mean, we just recently had a. We chose to stay. I'll just say that. Yeah. We chose to stay. There was a lot of crying and wailing and gnashing of teeth because we got offered a huge chunk of money. And we didn't take it, and then the company that offered it, then a few months later, they were a national company, stations all across the country, and they collapsed. And just financially, they collapsed and were bought out. And so it was a good move that we didn't do it, I think.
Yeah. As for me, no, I haven't had the opportunity at this point. When I was married, it was very clear to me that Utah would be my home for the rest of my life, and so I didn't even entertain the idea of it. But maybe. If you're offering, let's talk.
Yeah, do you have anything?
Yeah, please. No. All right. So that's the last question.
Okay. Bye.
Okay. You bet. Thank you, you guys.